My name's Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic member of the South Dixie Group. It's great to be here. How are you guys? Crazy guys. So I want to, you know, I wish I could say I planned. Did I say I was an alcoholic? What? You can't hear me? You can't hear me? That would be Sheldon's fault. He used to turn the volume up. Can't hear me. Can you all hear me? Okay, very good. Yes. Thank you. This is Chrissy. Okay. You know, I want to say a couple of shout outs to some people. Wish I could say I planned something for you tonight, but I never do, because then I'd get nervous and try to figure out what I was going to say. And you'll know what I'm going to say when I say it. Okay. I'll tell you what I'm going to say. And then I'll tell you what I'm saying. And then I'll tell you what. Then I'll tell you what I told you, you know, so we'll figure that out. So I have, for the last year and a half or so, I don't even know how long I've been on Zoom. I have this whole Zoom family. We all develop, you know, it says God will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. So I have a lot of people all over the world now, you know, and we all get to meet people in different states and everything all over the world. So I love these hybrid meetings, because I get to invite all my good friends from New York and New Jersey and all over the world. And I see a bunch of these crazy people. There's Tony from Australia, from Sydney. And I don't even want to start naming names, because there's too many of them. I'll leave somebody out and they'll get pissed off. They're so sick, they'll get pissed off anyway. It doesn't even fucking mean anything. So, but I got a whole bunch of them here from New York that flew down from New York for Trini, who's also here with his wife and family. Where is Trini? With his wife and two children, who's celebrating 3 years, okay? So I want to give a shout out for Trini. I want to also invite you, if you have a chance sometime, to say a prayer for Steve Boyarski, who's in New York, New Jersey. His father passed away, and they're having the funeral tonight. I know a lot of people aren't here on Zoom because they're in New York, New Jersey, going to his father's funeral. And also, I'm sorry, prayers for Steve Schmergel and his wife, who is in on the line now. Well, he looks pretty good to me. He looks better than me, you know, I'll tell you. I mean, God bless you, Steve. You know, we love you. And prayers for Jay. I know he's going through a situation. And Jay's, where are you, Jay? Yeah, he's not going through a situation anymore. He's fine now, you know. Pray for all you guys. So it's good to be here. So I'm here to comfort the disturbed and disturb the comfortable. So let's start right out and do that shit. You know what I mean? Book of Deuteronomy. Okay, here's the deal. There's a craziness going on here. But let me explain this to you. This is my 11th talk here. And usually on the 11th talk, I'm on the 11th step. You get that? Well, whatever, you know. Not that I'm actually doing the steps, but I mean that if this was a real step series, I'd be talking about the steps. Once in a while, I touch on them. It's okay. But here's the deal. If this was a regular, if I actually knew what I was doing, I haven't found necessarily have a drink since January 25th, 1981. So I've been doing step series like this for 30 years now. And when I used to do them, you know, back when I was younger, I'm 72 now. Geez, right after I say 72, my mind goes blank. It's the dementia. So when I started doing these things 30 years ago, I mean, you really should have caught me when I had like 10 or 15 years. I was really good at this shit, you know? I was like right on top of the step, you know what I mean? Somewhere around 25 years sobriety, my brain went to mush. Somewhere around the time when I stopped doing the steps and started, well, what I say, because I believe this is true, this is my opinion, you know, based on when I started living the steps, my life in the steps, living a manner of living that demand rigorous honesty, where I was restraining myself from tongue and pen, where the 10th step was not so much apologizing or making amends, but more shutting the fuck up, you know what I mean? Or not saying what I was going to say, or not sending the email, or not doing things. Because it dawned upon me, and, you know, these things take time with some people, with me a little bit more time because I'm smart. Because when you're smart, you rationalize, you tell yourself rationalize. It took me a lot longer because I operate like most alcoholics operate on our feelings. So feelings sort of they overwhelm values. So you say things like, go screw yourself. You're a son of a bitch. I hate your guts. You know, you say shit. which you probably shouldn't say, but your feelings have you say it. And then what happens is, well, if you didn't do that, I wouldn't have said that. So you justify, you have no control over your, you don't drink anymore, but you have no control over your feelings. And like most alcoholics, you worship your feelings. You think your feelings are important. You think they're meaningful. They're the basis for life, sexual feelings, romantic feelings, the basis for life. And you never quite understand why you're always screwing up and hurting people and feeling crappy. Because instead of doing what's right, you do what you feel like doing. And you always feel like what you're doing is right. And you end up hurting a lot of people. But you don't give a shit because the only feeling you care about is yourself. Because you're selfish and you're self-centered and you're driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking. You step on those of others, they retaliate seemingly without provocation, but you made decisions based upon self, based upon, why don't you say this, you make the decisions based upon your selfish feelings, which put you in a position to be hurt. You understand? If somebody comes along and says, I don't really give a shit what the fuck you feel like, you go over there and help that other person. I don't give a shit whether you feel like doing it. You make the coffee for the group. And you run into characters like that, and some people pay attention to them because they don't want to drink, and some people blow them off. You understand what I'm saying? The ones that blow them off end up drinking and never get this program. The ones that pay attention and do shit they don't want to do end up staying sober for a long period of time and get better. And that's pretty much simply what the deal is. But the same, well, people's anonymous, you know, I mean, that's all I'm saying. It's and so it takes a long time. So somewhere around 25 years, when I stopped, like, in a sense, doing the steps, like it was a separate thing. I did, oh, that's a third step. Well, that's a second step. Because it wasn't a third. I wasn't turning my life over to God because I was living a turned over life. I wasn't doing special things to turn over because I'd wake up in the morning and I'd be thinking about God. And during the day, I'd be thinking about God and I'd be playing hymns or going to church or watching this or doing that or hanging out with people talking about God. So I was always thinking about God, but I didn't think about it as the 11th step or the 12th. It was just, you know, in order to get the things that most people in here will never have, you need to be willing to do things that most people will never do. And the truth is, most people will do what they think are the steps in order to try to not drink, but they'll never immerse themselves in a manner of living where they utterly abandon themselves to God, where they do what they're actually talking about in the book. What Bill Wilson did when he said, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease that I want to keep talking about and telling other people. Like when Dr. Bob said, if you're an atheist, agnostic, have some sort of intellectual pride that keeps you from doing this, I feel sorry for you. Your heavenly father will never let you down. You know, your real reliance has to be on him. When they never really get into the real deal, you understand? And they just sort of do a once over lightly or five over lightly, but they're never going to do this because they're just going to take it out of their face. That's your program, not my program. Whatever the hell that is, they say. You know what I mean? What happens is they don't stay sober. They drink after 10 years, 15 years, or they find themselves living a life of desperation. Quiet desperation, which means that 20 years, the 25 years, the 30 years sobriety, the 40 years sobriety, but they're lonely, but they're not happy with their sobriety, you know, but at that point in time, they're lost. They're lost in the wilderness because they haven't even, they can't even summon up the desperation that a newcomer will do to do something. They will not be able to get the humility to do what a newcomer will do, because they're so proud of their not drinking. And so the time when they might have gotten on their knees and surrendered themselves to God is really over. And then the cancer comes and the people die and the real shit starts happening. And they're incredibly unprepared for that. Because I've seen them die as believers and I've seen them die as unbelievers. You don't want to die not knowing where you're going. It's a fearful thing. It's a fearful thing. If you haven't figured it out yet, if you're an alcoholic, if you haven't figured out yet that at 3 o'clock in the morning or 2 o'clock in the morning or your entire life, that the thing that you hate the most, that's the most horrible thing, is fear of the unknown. If you haven't figured out that fear of the unknown and what's going to happen to you is the worst thing for an alcoholic to deal with, then you and I are suffering from a different disease. Because I've been doing this son of a bitch by the numbers. And I know the one thing I hate is worrying about what may happen or what possibly may happen or what's going to happen when I don't have the answer. And you know, something, it's one thing when it has to do with a sexual or romantic relationship. It's another thing when it has to do with jobs. It's another thing when it has to do with money. A whole other thing when it has to do with whether you're gonna live or die. And ain't nobody else, nobody getting out of this thing without, you know, alive. You're all gonna go through it. You understand what I'm saying? And I've watched it happen. You know, I've seen the proof is in the pudding, really. I've watched the people. You know, I've watched people go through really incredible times, difficult times as believers. I've watched them go through difficult times as non-believers. And I'm not, you know, listen, I was born at night, but I wasn't born last night. I'm not stupid. I can see how each one handles it. And I don't want to be that guy. You know what I mean? That's freaking out at 15 years, but I don't know where to go. I have no idea where to go because I've done everything I think they're telling me to do in AA. And it ain't working for me anymore. And I don't even know how to who to talk to about it not working for me anymore. And that's even worse. I don't even know what to do. Now, if you're a newcomer, you know, you got 2 or 3 or 4 years where you're not that prideful in your sobriety, you know, you're not scared. You can throw up your hands and say, I need help. I know what's going on. You can maybe get somebody to sort of guide you and maybe you'll listen to them. Maybe you will go to Bible study. Maybe you will pay attention to the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous when it says we encourage church membership. You know, they say in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, we encourage church membership. That's what they said in the book. They put it in the book. You know, they put it in the book. Rarely have we seen a person fail as thoroughly followed. They put it in the book. They say, this is what they say. This is almost the exact words. We encourage church membership. We encourage you to get closer and closer to God. So we encourage church membership. Most of us belong to such institutions. They don't tell you what church because they want you to congregate with people that are talking about God. It helps with the 11th step. It helps you to get closer and closer. That's why they put it in the book. They could have left it out of the book. Yeah, they helped that guy. The atheist guy said, you know, it's weird, all that stuff. But they put that in the book and said, most of us are doing that. They put in the book and said, and then they had this line. This is the line they had. But it's optional. And the founders of AA say, we encourage church membership. Most of us do this. You know, rarely have a seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed a path. Most of us do this. We've been rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence. We've experienced much of heaven. God is the central fact of our life. He lives in our hearts and minds in a way which is indeed miraculous. You know where they talk about this stuff? They talk about this stuff at church. At synagogue. That's where they talk about this stuff. So the body, and they say, and we encourage church membership. Most of us do this. They say, but it's optional. So you got two types of people in AA. You got the type of people that say, it's extra credit. I understand it's optional. It's extra credit. But I'm going to fucking do it anyway. I'm going to do it anyway. Listen, there are people that play golf, and then there are Tiger Woods. There are people that, you know, pole vault, and they run track. And then there are Olympians. Now, the Olympians, what they do, the guys who get the gold crown, they work every day to be far ahead of anybody who's in second place so they can win the gold crown, knowing they'll never get perfection, but they're shooting for the 10. In sixth step parlance in this group, that would be called not settling for a personal idea of what good is, but settling for the idea of what we where we have to go, which is in the mind of God. In other words, settling that what we have to do here is shoot for perfection, even understanding we will never get there. And there are people that do the sixth step. They're few and far between. So, you know, there really are. The one that separates the men from the boys. Many are called, but few are chosen. There are people that will shoot for that. And they will do the extra credit shit. They will do the extra credit shit. They will do the extra credit stuff. They will go to the church. They will go to the Bible study. The 12 and 12, the Dr. Bob the Good Old Timer says, and it's all over our literature. It says the books we found absolutely essential are 1 Corinthians 13, Sermon on the Mount, and the book of James. Absolutely essential. Rarely have I seen a person fail a story of all the past. There are people that will read those books and study them because they're in for the extra credit. They're in for the long run. They're in for the deal. You know what I mean? There are those people. There are people that are, and those people are always talking about God. They want to listen to people who are talking about God. They love to hear that stuff. And then there are people, then the other type of people, that hate people that talk about that shit. They walk out of rooms and they hate people that talk about that shit because they are not going to do it and they don't want to do it. And they think you shouldn't talk about it, even though it's in the book. They don't want you to talk and they don't want anybody to do it because if that's what AA becomes, they might have to do it. And they don't stick around and they drink. Or they're not happy with their sobriety and they don't realize the joy of living. And unfortunately, because of AA and because of the consequences of our drinking and the consequences of alcoholism, unless until an alcoholic accepts his alcoholism and all its consequences, his sobriety will be precarious. One of the consequences of alcoholism is that we're codependent. Now, I don't even know what codependent means, but I think it has something to do with what we worry about. We worry a lot about what other people think about us, even though we tell ourselves we don't worry about, we don't care what other people think about us. And so what happens is if somebody in a room looks at you with disdain or tells you we don't do the God thing, or you may hurt other people, you fucking believe them. Because the one fear an alcoholic has that should be on all your lists is a fear of the judgment of other people. And the only free, the biggest freedom you get in the promises is you lose fear of other people and of economic insecurity. And most of us have economic insecurity because if we lose our car or job, we worry about what people will think about us. So the point is, the victory in AA is losing fear of other people and their judgment upon you. And the death in AA is that we sit in groups of people, it ain't Well People's Anonymous, that tell us we ought to be afraid of them and not do what's really in the book, what's right in front of them, because you'll be judged badly. So at some point along the way, you either have to decide who you're going to hang out with. And here's the great thing. It's a personal decision for you. Nobody's going to force you one way or the other. You know, there's going to be, for every person like me that's saying go this way, there's going to be another person saying it's all bullshit, go that way. And you get to judge, and this ain't a dress rehearsal, what your life is going to be like. It's as simple as that. Whether you continue to be scared of other people and be in that bondage, which is even worse than the drink, as bad as the drinking, the bondage of worrying about what other people think about you, or you're going to be free. You're going to know the new freedom and the new happiness. Then you get that choice. So many years ago, you remember Dr. Young? You remember what Dr. Young said? My sponsor said, why do you do the things you do? Why do you say the things you do? I said, that's my personality. He says, your personality is killing you. So how do you get rid of your person? How do you get rid of the personality that tells
he's
you?
He's got lots of pillows here. Feather one.
How do you get rid of the personality where you get in the car and you say, oh, man, I wonder what they think about that meeting. I don't like that. I think somebody walked down. I don't think they like me. How do you get rid of that shit when you've been living with that shit all your life? Okay. Well, you can't. Only God can do. How do you get rid of drinking? Only God can do that. Only God can do that. You don't turn away. You turn away from God. You turn towards God. You know, you got your choice. Curses or blessings. That's the deal. So the bottom line is, so over a period of time, and it takes time. It takes a lot of time. And a lot has to do with who you hang out with. I was told the man and woman you'll be in the next 5 years will depend on who you hang out with and the books you read. And quite frankly, the books I read were basically based upon who I hung out with. What I did based upon who I hung out with and who I listened to and who I believed, you know? And I don't know why I tended to hang out with these people rather than, I guess it is a program of attraction. I wanted what that guy had. I wanted what Al Kennedy had, who was dying of cancer, and he always do is trying to help other people. He was not talking about his cancer. He could have talked about his cancer. There's nothing wrong talking about your cancer, you know, but he was talking about, he was trying to help other people. How do you do that shit? How do you know you're dying and you only have a few months to live and you go to a meeting and you start talking about other people and trying to help them? I couldn't do that, but I know I wanted, I knew there was something special about that. So in any event, so apparently in Dr. Young, when he says he's talking to Roland Hazard, he says ideas, emotions, and attitudes that with God and changing of the personality, he said it's some sort of psychic change. It's a God-driven change. It doesn't even matter whether you go to church or anything like that. Something happens to these people. Ideas, emotions, attitudes that are the guiding force of these men's lives are pushed to one side. And they become dominated by a whole new set of ideas, emotions, and attitudes. Whole new idea. Is that what you want? It says we must get rid of the selfishness. We must, or it kills us. God makes that possible. I'm sorry. I mean, you're entitled to your own opinion, not entitled to your own facts. That's what the book says. God makes that possible. And it says, once we make a sincere decision for God, all sorts of amazing things happen. Being all powerful, he gives us everything we need if we stay close to him and perform his work well. That's what it says. That's what the book says. That's the program of recovery. I don't care what you think. You may think the program of recovery has to do with the fourth step. No. You may think the program of recovery has to do with the fifth step. No. These are but tools we use, exercises we take to the gym in order to get fit, in order to get the promises. You know? The program of recovery is not the barbells. You know? We don't worship the barbells. You know, at the end of the program of recovery, what's supposed to happen is you're supposed to have some sort of abiding conviction and commitment to God. That's what the sixth step says. The men and the boys, the men are the ones that are repeatedly trying to do this so they can grow in the image and likeness of their creator. What do you think they're talking about? What kind of mindset do you have to, how deluded, I know we're delusional, but how deluded do you have to be to honestly believe they're not talking about having an abiding, serious commitment to God and making him the centerpiece of your life, when they say it over and over and over again? And of course they lie in the big book, but it's a good lie. It's a white lie. What they do, knowing that they're working with crazy people. But look, when you're working with crazy people, what you have to do is you do what I do. You act crazy so that they feel, hey, that guy's crazy. I'm crazy. I like that guy. He's fucking crazy. But in the midst of acting crazy, you say the F word a couple of times. You say, ah, I like this guy. He's not fucking. In the middle of acting crazy, once you got him going for you, here's what I'm doing to you. He says, you say shit that makes sense. So it's too fucking late. They can't take it out of their mind, you know, because they allowed it in. You know what I mean? So I say, the guy's fucking nuts, but he makes sense. I like what, you know what I mean? So they do the same thing in the big book. They say, we don't want to deprecate material achievement. Nobody wants to put down money. And then two lines later, they say, but nobody's worth part of their life than running after, you know, blondes, brunettes, and redheads and money and all. It's all bad. You got to make God number one. I mean, how many times do I have to say, you know, you're okay, but you need to go to God. You're okay, but you need to go to God. You're okay, but you need to go to God. You're okay, but you need more God. You got to increase your contact with God. How many times do I have to say it? I mean, how stupid can it not? Very stupid. Or as my wonderful philosopher John Wayne once said, life is tough. If you're stupid, it's even tougher. You know what I mean? So 2,000 years ago, no, 8,000 years ago, 10,000 years ago, because what's his face? Carl Jung said these things have been happening along. Moses, anybody heard of Moses? Very big in the Old Testament. I'm telling you, major hero of the Old Testament, the whole Bible deal. If you're Jewish, this won't offend you. Don't worry about it. It's like a Moses thing. You know, and he was like big on the God thing, by the way. He really was. Bush that does not consume himself, did all this stuff, went up to Pharaoh, wasn't scared, you know, did all this stuff. Did the first step, did all the steps, you know. So, no, seriously, did them all, yeah. Then Jesus came along, sponsored 12, you know the rest of the story. But in any event, the bottom line, so Moses in Deuteronomy, look this up, Deuteronomy 30, after all the stuff happened, all the miracles happened, all the curses on Egypt happened, leads the Jews out of the Israelites out of, you know, into the deal, into the desert. He's about to enter the land. He's old. He's about to retire. Okay. I'm telling you, he's leaving. Joshua's about to take over. He's coming in, okay? He's about to retire. So he gives a little speech to all the Jews. He gives a little speech. It's in Deuteronomy 30. You ought to look it up. You don't have to. It's optional. But I would do it if I was you. It's actually has to do with the steps. It actually has to do with the 10th step. If you want to know something about the 10th step, you need to look at Moses's speech to the Jews in Deuteronomy 30. You know about the 10th step. Did you know that? Well, I can promise you this. The founders of AA knew that because they studied the Bible. Because they came out of the Oxford group. So I can promise you they knew it. But listen, if there's anything I know about alcoholics, they're very happy to remain stupid. and not do more. They're very happy. You know, they're lazy. They're happy to remain. You know, well, it doesn't say I have to do it. Nobody said I have to do it. You know, religion bad. You know, I'm spiritual. You're not spiritual. Where did you get the idea you're spiritual? Why do you think you go to all these meetings? You go to all these meetings so you won't fuck up because of all the temptations of the outside world. I take you away from these meetings. You're out there having sex, doing orgies, doing all sorts of crazy shit. You know what I mean? You are not spiritual. You're evil. No. Say that with pride. The Bible says the heart of man is evil. If there's one thing, one of the things you got to learn in here is not to bullshit yourself. Don't take yourself seriously. Don't bullshit yourself. Don't think to yourself when you say I'm spiritual that you like own that territory, that you bought it, it's paid for, and you can move away from these meetings and move away from sponsorship and go out there in that world with those people, with the money, with the cars, with the jewelry, with the TV, with the movies, with all the temptations, and remain okay and not drinking. 99% of the shit you complain about in AA, at meetings, going to meetings, has to do with trying to deal with the outside world and that shit because you can't handle it. So when are you going to wise up? When are you going to figure this shit out? So Moses says this. It's called the speech of curses and blessings. He basically says this. If you continue to do what God tells you to do, you're going to be prosperous and you're going to have incredible lives. And you're going to have all these blessings. But if you don't, you're screwed. Now, I read a lot of versions of the Bible. I read the King James Version, the King Jimmy Version. You know, I read the NIV, you know, the New International Version. I use the ESV. I use a lot of different versions because I want more. It's optional, but I want more. You know, because I want to be an Olympian. You understand what I'm saying? So I do that stuff. There's no version I found where it says Moses said, if you don't continue to do this, you'll be screwed. I just want you to know that, okay? That's my own translation, okay? But I want you to understand something, and I believe this in my heart. It's an accurate translation. It's an accurate translation. I say that for you guys because I talk alky. You got to be able to talk alky if you're talking about, you know, the Apostle Paul said, I become all things to all men by using all means. I win son of them. You know what I mean? You got to talk alky. You can't talk to longshoremen and talk like you're a college professor at Harvard. You know what I mean? You got to talk like a longshoreman. If I'm talking to alcoholics, I got to talk alky, which means I have to get crazy. You know what I mean? Got to get a little crazy. You know what I mean? Because I know how we talk to ourselves, which is really the only person we ever have a decent conversation with. Because who the hell, because nobody else understands, right? You know what I mean? You know that. Nobody understands us. So I want to tell you, that's what it is. If you continue to do what God wants you to do and you do this thing, it's going to be nothing but blessings for you and joy. And if you don't, it's all horror. And we got a lot of people in here that are coming back or they'll say things like, well, this isn't my first time, or I had 8 years one time and then I blew it, or I had 5 years and then I blew it, or, you know, I've been around AA for 30 years, but I got 3 months. We got a lot of people, nothing wrong with that. I'm glad you guys are here. But every one of these people that are that way, you know, or starting over, or who started over in their lives, every one of these people who are doing that, who are that deal, if you ask them, or if they talk at meetings, they'll say, you say, why'd you go out? They'd say, I stopped doing this. I stopped going to meetings. I stopped speaking to my sponsor. I stopped doing that. They'll just tell you about how they stopped continuing. They didn't continue. It's the only thing that's new in the 10th step, continue to take personal inventory. The inventory isn't new. It's we continue to take the same inventory we have been taking. We learned in the 4th step. We continue to take personal inventory. When we're wrong, we probably admit it. That's the 5th step. Make amends. That's the 9th step. That's it. There's nothing new in the 10th step except the word continue. For us, continued is a major, major word. Because no matter what you say as to why you couldn't do this thing or why you couldn't stay sober, no matter what you say to me, well, this is the reason why my mother died. The parakeet needed shampooing. I couldn't. I don't care what you say. The bottom line is, at the heart of it, after I wipe up all the bullshit, it's I stopped continuing. I stopped continuing. So now, being smart alcoholics, you say this. You're sitting there right now. Anybody ever say things like, I'm going to stop drinking. Man, before I came to AA, I said that a million times. I could never do it. Like pronouncing you're going to stop drinking. Pronouncing you're going to stop drinking. Like you have some power to stop. How about this? I'm going to stop thinking about this shit. You ever tell yourself you're going to stop thinking about that stuff? And then it's another week long of thinking about it? You know why? Because you don't realize you're powerless. You've lost the concept of the fact that you need God because you're powerless. You can't stop thinking about it. If you could stop thinking about it, you wouldn't be here. If you could stop drinking, you wouldn't be here. If you could stop worrying, you wouldn't be here. If you could stop lusting after this world and the people in this world, you wouldn't be here. If you could stop being lonely, you wouldn't be here. You're here because you can't stop it. You don't even know you can't stop it. That's one of the biggest problems you have in here, because you think you can stop it. You don't know you can't stop it. You can do the steps of the, you just don't know you can't stop it. You have not surrendered to the fact that you can't stop. You can't stop. You couldn't stop drinking. You can't stop doing all this other stuff that's plaguing you now. So what happens? So we come in here and we say things like, and I've said this. I've heard guys talk about slipping and I had 3-5 years. I said, well, I'm just never going to stop going to meetings. Because you hear at meetings, why do people drink? Because they stop going to meetings. You say, that's pretty simple. I'm just never going to stop going to meetings. But then all of a sudden you realize something that's really kind of confusing, that every one of these people, the guy who had 30 years, the guy who had 20 years and everything, at one time sat in an audience like you did and said, I'm just never going to stop going to meetings. And they stopped anyway. So you start thinking, apparently, maybe that's the problem. I think I can make a pronouncement and have it stick. And maybe the problem is I'm powerless over that stuff. And then you start late. And so what happens to me is later on down the road at 25 years or 35 years, I actually start drawing, connecting dots. And this is why maybe I don't talk about the steps, but I do talk about the steps. Because I look past the mechanics of where you write down the names and you do this and you do that. I'm past the mechanical stuff, which you can get by opening up the book and seeing a chart or all that sort of stuff and just following directions. And I try to see, what is the connection? Why is it that some people, why? It's not that you stop going to meetings. I get that. Why do people stop going to meetings? Why do people stop talking to their sponsor or pick the sponsors they pick? Why do people stop praying to men? Why do they do it? And then I start drawing a connection between the second, the 10th step, the continuing, the continuation of this program that will tell whether you're going to have 40 or 50 years of contented sobriety, and the 7th step and the 6th step, which separates the men from the boys, which has to do with making such a supreme commitment, more than a 3rd step commitment, so that you're repeatedly trying for a lifetime to grow in the image and likeness of your creator. And I see that there is a connection, that nothing in this world will cement you to this program of recovery and to this way of life against the devils out there, the designs of the devil out there. Listen, guys. If you don't commit yourself to the 7th step, commit yourself to God, the blonde's going to get you. It's going to get you. The brunette's going to get you. Girls, the good-looking guy, the marriage is going to get you. The good-looking, the family's going to get you. You don't cement yourself to the God that they're talking about in here and you make him the centerpiece of your life, the money's going to get you. It's not going to get you necessarily in a bad way. It'll get you in a way that you'll feel pleasure. You'll be running after, you'll one day you will not go to the meeting, because you don't have time, because you got work. One day you won't go to the meetings because you promised this gal this, you promised this gal. One day you won't go to the meetings because, you know, you have to do it. There'll be something out there that will draw you away, because you're out there 24 hours a day. You're in here like 1 hour a day if you're lucky. and you'll start peeling this thing off. And you know something? You won't be immediately pounded. You won't be crushed. Good shit will happen to you. You'll make money. You'll do well. The problem is they get too well too fast. And you'll start thinking, and you're not drinking, and you're getting blessings, and everything's going okay. The day will come that you're not going to meetings. And you're not, you don't have a sponsor because you don't need a sponsor. Because you don't have what we have, what we want, but you have what you wanted in the first place, which is the same shit you were chasing after before you got here. Because that's what you really want. And then what'll happen is you got the house, you got the car, you got this, and all of a sudden it's divorce, and all of a sudden it's cancer, and all of a sudden it's this, and you got no freaking place to go. You got no place to go. You can't run and hide because everything that's been puffing you up and holding you up is gone. And you can't go back to AA because your pride will stop you from going back to AA because you ain't going to pick up. You can't call up your sponsor because your pride will stop you from going there. So you live a life of quiet desperation and you're alone. And that's the deal. And maybe you'll just live a miserable life. Or more than likely, what usually happens is you end up drinking a drug. Maybe you go to the psychiatrist, he gives you some Xanax, whatever it is. Next thing you know, you're on pills, or you're drinking a drug, and then you're in an AA meeting one day, picking up a white chip, talking about how you used to have 25 years. And you don't know what happened. And that's what happened because you didn't do the sixth step, because you weren't committed. Because the bottom line is the reason they have the sixth step in there, the 11th step, and improving your relationship with God is because the cement that holds you, it's not even the fellowship. Yeah, the fellowship will hold you in here for a while. You'll get friends, and it's great to have a great fellowship. We have one here. But you know, some eventually you'll find the fellowship out there because you crave fellowship. Eventually, if this fellowship isn't giving you the sex or the money or the thing you think you need, you know, and the real fellowship in here is the God fellowship. Is the God fellowship. So if the fellowship in here, if you hang around, you know, there's two fellowships in here. Trust me, there are two fellowships. There's the God fellowship and the not God fellowship. There are people that want to hear about God and feel about finding God. There are people that don't want to hear that shit. You know, trust me, it's here. Okay. And the not God fellowship, they don't really care about you. They really don't. You think they do, but it's like the fellowship of the bar, but with coffee. It's like coming. I used to go to the bar every day at 4 o'clock. I love that fellowship. We drank. It was the greatest fellowship in the world, but it's not true fellowship. It's fellowship based upon mutual destruction. But there's another fellowship present here. And you decide what you're going to join. It says God will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. God will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. God will not show you how to create a fellowship that hates God. You understand? So you got to start reading behind the lines to get a little discerning and find out what this thing is all about. And what you find out is that commitment to God and commitment to worshiping God and doing the things you really talk about in this and fellowship with that. That will make that completely cancels out the rest of the world. The rest of the world can't touch you. Can't touch you. Can't touch you. You'll last for 30, 40 years. Now I feel a little guilty. I feel like I should say something about the 10th step. Although I actually feel I've already said a lot about the 10th step. You understand? Maybe what I think, maybe the most important thing about the 10th step, but I want to tell you a couple things about the 10th step, then I can rest easy tonight. Well, I said, well, I told him so. So I had to reach back in my bag of tricks and go back to when I had like 10 or 12 years sobriety. I said, well, when you were doing the 10th step, when you were actually doing the steps, you know what I mean? What did you used to say? I'm going to give you two 10th step stories. You know what I mean? So this is an official 10th step meeting. Okay. So if I can remember them, because now I forgot them. So when I had about 3 or 4 years in the program, it's like 33, I don't know how old I was, 33, 34 years old. I was working in a law office. I had this secretary, very, very prim and proper, from England, don't you know, you know? Speaking with the English language, nice looking, very English, very prim and proper, you know, that kind of, and I'm like Mary Poppins, you know, like a very weird Mary Poppins, though. Maybe a little strange Mary Poppins. But in any event, I had this secretary and I shared her with the boss, with the senior partner. And so one day I went up to speak to her because I had to dictate a letter. I share her. And she was on the phone. She was talking on the phone in one of those swivel chairs. Like, I got a swivel chair here. I want you to picture this. And I go up to her and she's on the phone. And this is what I hear. This is the words I hear. Oh, yeah. And then we got on the boat. Frank looked so cute in his, oh, he was in those shorts. He looked so cute. And then we went out and we were going to make lobster on the beach. And I was having such a good time. And I'm standing there. And I go like this. I go, I'm a sober alcoholic. You know, I gave her 30 seconds, whatever it is. And then I go like this. I go like this. I go, because maybe she didn't notice me, because sometimes people overlook me, you know, I'm not noticeable. And she turned her back on me. She swiveled around. She said, Leslie, I'm sorry, but there's somebody pestering me here. And it's difficult for me to talk to you. Now, I had about 2 or 3 years. Whatever thin veneer of sobriety I had upon me at that time fucking vanished. Like Hiroshima blew it away. You know what I mean? Now, I understand there may be children here, so close their ears. And I turned to her and I said, listen to me. Now, this is before all this male chauvinist pig stuff. This is back, you wouldn't believe this, political correctness and everything. And I said, if you don't get off the phone, I'm going to wrap that fucking phone around your neck and throw you out the fucking window. Which I don't believe you can do these days. It was effective. It was very effective. She got off the phone. I dictated the letter and I started walking downstairs. So I'm walking downstairs and I'm thinking, I'm telling you, the fucking committee, she said this and I said that, and I'm going to kill it. And who the fuck she thinks, yeah, blah, 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 and back and forth. And that guy, there. And before I got down the stairs, I hear this voice and it says, you're wrong. You got to make amends. I said, that ain't going to fucking happen. Because that ain't going to happen. Ever. You got to make amends. And I just keep on thinking, it's just killing me. And I know I got to do it. So I get to the bottom of the stairs. I turn up and I walk up back the stairs and I look and I said, Val, I said, I was wrong. I should never said that stuff to you. And she looked at me, she says, I was wrong too. That's all she said. She said, I was wrong too. And so that night I was home with my kids, playing with them instead of in a bar somewhere talking about his fucking secretary and getting drunk. That's the first 10-step story. Now all I got to do is try to remember the second one. Oh, this is a good one. I like this one. Here's the second 10-step story. So you see, I can actually, see, here's the truth. I have actually done this shit. You know what I mean? It's true. So the second one is I'm in a car with my son. He's like 11 years old. And I'm driving, I'm getting to go to the bank. And my son is in the passenger seat. I'm in the driver's seat. I'm supposed to go to Publix, pick up something. I have to cash a check. And I'm in the lane and there's like 10 cars in front of me. And I got my law account with that bank. I got like 4 different accounts at that bank. I got for the law office and everything like that. There's like 10 cars in front of me. And I see this lane that says commercial business only. And there's nobody there. I'm a lawyer. I got my law office. I got 4 accounts with this bank. I peel around. I go to the commercial thing early. There's some like 18-year-old girl. Tell her there. I hand her my check. She looks at it. She says, I'm sorry, sir. This is for commercial accounts only. I said, yes, I understand. I'm a lawyer. I have my law office's account with this thing. I got 4 accounts you can check. So I'm a commercial customer. So he says, I'm sorry, we can't do that. We can't do that. You'll have to go around and wait in line. 18-year-old girl. So I immediately, whatever thin veneer of sobriety I had on me, blows away. And I say, what's your name? I pull the I'm an attorney, I'm going to crush your fucking ass card. What's your name? Doris. Doris what? I need to know your name and your boss's name. I said, I need to know this. So I start bullying this young girl. It's probably her first job. She doesn't buckle. She, you know, blah, 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 and the same thing. And I I say, screw this. And I go over to Publix and I pay whatever. I don't cash the check. And I'm walking around Publix saying, fucking girl, wouldn't even cash my blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I'm going nuts. And I get in the car. I drive back to the bank because it's just killing me. It's killing me. Because guilt like that, the wrongdoings of others, fans, they just kill you. I'm dying. I go back in line. I go up to the guy. I said, listen, I apologize. I was wrong for doing that. And she says, I think she said, okay, thank you very much. I said, that's it. I drove home. That's not the end of the story. So I drive home. And I'm not thinking about her anymore. I did that. And I'm in my room doing something. And I hear from the other side of the house, my son, the 11-year-old, talking to my wife. And he's saying things like this. And then he drove back to the bank and he apologized to her. He was like blown away. He couldn't believe it. You know, your kids watch this shit. They listen to this stuff. They pay attention to how you act. They're like amazed, you know what I mean? If you got kids, it makes a big difference. You know, that's just two examples. And listen to me, all my life, at least for the first 20 years, I was doing nothing but 10 steps because all my life I was screwing up, you know, less so. To be truthful with you, and you could say it's what I don't do it that much anymore. Because I just don't find myself feeling guilty or feeling bad or feeling like, oh man, I don't have people living rent-free in my house, my head. Because one of the benefits, because if you look at the 10 step, what it says eventually, you practice something called restraint of tongue and pen. Because one of the benefits of the 10 step is when you get over and over and over again, making amends, at some point you say to yourself, it sort of clicks. I can't explain it to you. It clicks. Like the Buddha says, I'm sick and tired of making amends. You just get sick of apologizing and you say, I'm just not going to do stupid shit, you know? And the Lord gives you the ability not to do stupid things. Not all the time, but if you do, at least you know what you got to do, how to make amends. And so you live, it's a better life without people living rent-free in your head. Okay. So thank you very much. God bless.